wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, everybody, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. It's Open Line Friday. If you want to call or text, we would love to have you be part of the show. Mello is here, too. Hi, Mello.
Good morning.
Thanks for hanging out with us, Mello. Mm-hmm. With your Ketchikan, Alaska shirt on.
Yes, it was my cruise shirt for my parents' 50th anniversary.
I think it's that time of year, right? Everybody's going cruising, it seems like.
I've got one planned for October.
Do you? Really? Where are you going?
Don't ask me. Somebody else is planning, and I'm just saying yes.
I think Mexico, something. Oh, like Puerto Vallarta or something
Maybe.
Like that.
Maybe. Okay. I'll have to ask my sister-in-law. I don't know.
All right. Now, how can you go on a trip where someone else is planning all the details?
I say, how about I give you the money and you book it for me?
Oh, I could never do that.
Oh, I'm so easy.
I know, but you have to really trust the person doing it.
I do. I do. My sister-in-law, Paula, is pretty amazing. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll go along with that, but I tell you, I would have a hard time just saying, here's my money, go make it happen, and trust that they would do everything that I want.
So when I went for my birthday to Tennessee, I had my daughter, Julia. I gave her the information on what I wanted to do, and she planned and booked everything for me and my friend. And my friend flew in from Delaware, and I flew in from Utah. And then we met, and she had everything lined out. She had her whole itinerary printed out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Before we get rolling too far on the show, I didn't want to mention this. People know this probably. If you've been on the freeway between here and, well, between, it's exit 12 and 13, right? Washington City area. Yes, there was a fatality this morning. A semi-truck hit a person walking on the freeway at about 6 o'clock this morning. So it was light, but just barely, you know, kind of to the early morning twilight, one of the, you know, that area where the sun's not up yet, but it's starting to get light. But so because there was a fatality, they had to do the accident reconstruction and do all the stuff that you do, not to mention, of course, all the emergency services and everything. That caused traffic to back up both northbound and southbound for miles. And some people were doing the old, I'm going to get in the median and flip around and get off on the exit and circumvent this all, which I suppose is not a terrible idea unless three or four people have the same idea at the same time and they all meet together in a crash. And so we had some secondary crashes as well this morning.
That's a bummer.
On the freeway. Yeah. So, but, so this is interesting. Channel, let me give them credit. KUTV has a story about this, and they said they talked with Cameron Roden from the UHP. He said that there were no cars present when the pedestrian was struck. This was the first accident. It was southbound near milepost 12. They said there were no cars, so there wasn't a disabled car. There wasn't a previous accident. And so we're sitting there scratching. And again, it's early in the story. This just happened this morning. But a lot of people are like, why was a woman walking on the freeway at 6 o'clock in the morning?
The only thing I can think of, just my dramatic brain goes to, maybe she got in a fight with her boyfriend and he kicked her out of the car and said, bounce down, just start walking. I don't know. I can't imagine why else you would be on the freeway. Unless you were put there and you didn't want to be there.
Now, there are two exits, right? 13 and 12. And maybe she just, it was the fastest way to get where she needed to go. Not the safest, obviously.
Sure, that could be it, too.
But the fastest way. Maybe there was a disabled car 3 miles up the road and she'd been walking a while. Or ran out of gas or something. We just don't know the answer.
That's so sad. I'm so sad for her family.
Incredibly sad, yeah. There was a time in my life I was a bail bondsman. So I was going out to purgatory and writing bail for writing bonds for people. And by far the biggest question I got from people was, it was a kind of a combo question. I would go and write the bail for them, but there was the person posting the bail was either them using their own credit card or someone posting bail for them who was not present. They had just called in a credit card, or especially if it was like 3 a.m. or whatever. So the question I kept always getting was, how do I get home? And, hey, can you give me a ride?
Oh, no.
And so there is a possibility. Say she lived in Santa Clara. Mm-hmm. She got bailed out of purgatory, didn't have a ride, maybe tried to walk home, and the quickest way was to maybe cut through the freeway. I don't know. This is all speculation.
That is a lot of speculation. Yes.
Generally speaking, my boss told me, he said, do not give him rides home. Don't do it. He said you'll be sorry. You do it once, and then all of a sudden you're a taxi service, and he says, you'd never know. We're talking about a criminal element most of the time, and you just never know what might happen.
Yeah.
So I did break the rule once or twice mm-hmm. when I deemed, you know, you kind of, I still do this. I still go by gut feeling, instinct, the spirit, and sometimes it just tells you this is one you should give a ride mm-hmm. home to. So,
yeah.
But what a sad situation this morning. Again, about 6 a.m. this morning. Near milepost 12, so that would be right by exit 12 in Washington City, a pedestrian was struck and killed by a semi truck on the freeway.
Mm.
And that right now is just about all we know.
And that's so sad for the truck driver, too. Because that's something you have to live with, too, and you didn't intend to, and just that guilt. That's so sad. It's a really sad situation.
So my son, my number two son, he drives for a living. Every night he goes, it's like 1 or 2 in the morning, he drives all morning, gets home at noon or whatever.
Mm.
And his run is up through Wyoming, usually, and back. But I one time I told him, I said, man, truck safety is, I said, man, that'd be scary putting all those hours, because he put in, a million hours or whatever mm-hmm. it is at this point. And he said, yeah, he says, I feel pretty good about my skills, though. I feel like I can anticipate what might happen. And I said, yeah, but there's always the X factor, right? like a pedestrian on the freeway at 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. or maybe some idiot pulling in front of you or whatever. And he says, yeah, there's always that. I just can't imagine, though. And my son has a very, very soft heart. He's a very tender-hearted guy. He has mm-hmm. four little kids, and he's just a soft-hearted guy. And I just can't imagine what that would do to him if mm-hmm. he, through maybe, probably no fault of his own,
mm-hmm.
killed a person with his semi. It's just
that would weigh on you for sure.
Yeah.
So a lot of hurt families out there today, so it's sad.
About, I want to go maybe 15 years ago, 12 to 15 years ago, I had a friend who, his wife was, she used to go early morning walk. A lot of women do early morning walking. That's like, mm-hmm. Kind of a cool thing. And she was walking along Buena Vista, and it was a little bit more of a bottleneck Buena Vista than it is now. They've widened it some, but, mm-hmm. it was two lanes is all, one each direction. And she was walking on the shoulder with her friend, and a guy drove by in a pickup, but his pickup had big wide mirrors because he pulls a trailer quite often.
Sure.
And the guy's fighting the morning sun. I think it was morning. If he was headed west, so it would have been evening time. Mm-hmm. He was fighting the evening sun, and he was in his lane, did not see pedestrians, and his mirror hit that lady in the head and killed her.
No.
And the guy was, he didn't even know it had happened. He heard kind of a noise, but he didn't know what had happened. And someone had actually had run him down with their car and kind of got him to pull over and told him what happened. And he was devastated.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
That's a terrible thing.
I remember in high school, there was a young girl, I'm not going to use her name, but I remember it vividly. And one morning she got up to go to early morning seminary class mm-hmm. and backed out of her driveway in the family Suburban or whatever it was, and ran over and killed her little brother.
Oh.
Who, there was no reason in the world why he should have been out in that driveway at mm-hmm. 5:30 or 6 in the morning. There was, I mean, it was definitely not her fault, although maybe, I guess you could make it go, well, she should have walked around and checked. There's always that kind of thing. You mm-hmm. should have, could have, would have, but
right.
there was no reason for a little kid, a little 3-year-old, to be out in the driveway at 5:30 or 6 in the morning mm. on a weekday. But yeah, she never did come back to school. I never saw her again. I saw her the day before. I never saw her again after that, because imagine the devastation that would take on you.
Oh, my gosh. I am so grateful for backup cameras that they have now.
Yeah.
Because it saved me several times, because you get used to just not looking behind you if you have the camera. So it's super nice to have.
I will say this. I like this. The idea that I don't know if yours does this, but mine always says this backup camera is not a foolproof way or something like that. Always check your surroundings before you,
mm-hmm.
Before you back up your vehicle. And I think that's true. This morning, so my future son-in-law crashed on our couch last night. By the mm-hmm. way, wedding is tomorrow.
Yay.
But And so he left his car in the driveway. It wasn't behind my truck, but it was just to the side of my truck. Mm. And had I not walked behind my vehicle, which I kind of have to do to get in anyway in the garage, but had I not walked behind it, the camera didn't really pick it up because the camera, I was in the garage and I was going to go straight back and his SUV was right there. If I'd have started to turn early or anything, it would have been a disaster. So. Yeah. Always check behind.
Yeah, mine beeps a little bit if there's somebody coming.
Really? Mm-hmm. I wish mine did. Mine doesn't do that. My old vehicle used to beep it, the blind spot beep I would get and beep if someone was coming. My current vehicle does not do that.
Yeah, that's a nice feature.
Okay, let's talk about houses for a little bit. This is, I purposely saved this story. I was going to talk about it a little bit yesterday, but I purposely saved it to because I wanted my real estate expert on.
Gosh.
That is you, Mello.
Okay.
Okay, a couple of different incidents. First of all, everybody kind of knows about the thing that happened in Washington City last week. Early morning raid, they went into a house, 1,700 or 1,900 square foot house. It wasn't that big.
Mm-hmm.
Found between 25 and 27 people in the house.
Oh, my goodness.
Most of which, not all, but most of which were illegal immigrants.
Okay.
So they raided the house because they had heard there were drugs present and there was all kinds of illegal activity. So ICE was there. FBI was there, Homeland Security was there, and Washington City Police were all there. And they went in and took them all out of the house. The house had all kinds of weird additions and partitions and add-on, all those things that aren't legal to do unless you get a permit. You know, they did.
Okay, I did hear about this. Yeah. I do remember hearing this. Okay.
And exposed electrical wires and anyway, the neighbors had been calling police for years on this house saying, hey, you got to do something. And the answer in the police's defense in this case was like, well, what are they doing that's illegal?
Mm-hmm.
And the neighbor was like, well, I just know there's stuff going on there.
Yeah, you can feel it. You know when you're
Yeah, well, but what's the police supposed to do? You can't get a search warrant based on the neighbor feeling like there's something bad happening.
Yeah, well, you could always do, and I don't know, but could you have called, like, code enforcement, like, if you noticed there was
And they did do that, and they issued several code enforcement violations. But the owner of this house lives in Las Vegas, and he swears, I think this is all a smokescreen personally, but I don't want to get sued, but he said, oh, I only rented it to 5 people. I don't know why there's that many people in there. But inside the house, each little section had, there were 15 different partitions built up, not just a temporary little thing, but they had built partitions to make 15 separate living areas in this house. And again, there were, I think there were 27 total people.
Yeah. My uncle had a house in Santa Clara and it was a bigger property. It was like a 2-story and it was like 3,500 square feet. It was a bigger house and the basement was huge and he had rented it to a family and he had been driving by like checking his property and there was like 10 cars there.
Wow.
And they had multi.
Well, and that was one of the complaints in this house too. There were a lot of cars, always a lot of cars. As you can imagine, 27 people there. How many cars?
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
Maybe one per person or, well, there were a couple of little kids. So maybe 20 cars or something, 22 cars there all the time. And the neighbors were frustrated. So the landlord, this was interesting. The landlord came to town to collect his rent from all his renters the day after the raid and found the house empty. And
so he knew if he'd come to the house to collect rent.
Yeah, he knew all about what was happening.
So I heard he was getting $15,000 a month in rent, is what I heard.
That is kind of the talk out there, was he was charging each individual person somewhere in the neighborhood of $600. If you do the math on that, that's $1,550, $1,515,
$15,000
per month of rent from the 27 people, which... That's a lot of money.
He knew exactly what he was doing.
He knew
he is so full of it.
Yeah,
that's just, it's not fair. And it's hard when you own a property and then people aren't using it the way you think they should. And that's definitely not safe. And maybe I would have called Child Protective Services because they would have actually gotten in there and checked out the property and the living situation.
But and everybody's like, hey, Andy, why don't you have a heart and say, hey, they should be helping these people, not busting these people. But... you had, first of all, if you want to talk about, if it's a racial thing that you're talking about, well, the landlord is Hispanic. okay? Mm-hmm. All the tenants were Hispanic. So I don't think we can go white slumlord renting to illegals. It's a Mexican renting to Mexicans, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't pull the race card on this one. And again, do you really think 27 people living in a 2,000 square foot house is safe?
That's
with exposed wires?
No, it's not safe. And you don't want anything to happen to them. You don't want a fire. You don't want anything to happen to them.
We have these codes for a reason, mm-hmm. right? I mean, exposed wires. I'm sorry, exposed wires when you have children in the house, even when you don't have children in the house, that's not a good thing.
No, it's not safe. It's not safe. And it's not fair for him to be exploiting those people, too.
Because they have nowhere else they can go.
Yeah. And charging $600 for like a little tiny cubicle of space is not very nice either. So.
Okay, now a related story, because it involves home ownership, mm-hmm. and calling the police. Okay, so over the weekend, a guy by the name of Brant Swink was arrested. He owns a home in Central. Okay. You know what Central is, right?
Yeah.
You know, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's that, SR 18 or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. He inherited the home because his parents passed away, okay. and he's 39 years old, so he's not a young guy. I mean, mm-hmm. that's pretty young to me, but he's not like 19 or something.
Right, he should know better from whatever he did, right?
So Swink was arrested again last Friday after deputies served a search warrant at his home in Central. Officers say they found meth, drug paraphernalia, and evidence that Swink had failed to register as a sex offender again.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when they served the warrant and went in the house and searched it, they found, stolen ID, stolen Social Security numbers, stolen credit card information, all that Swink swears he all got them all legally. Everybody just gave him his numbers.
So,
anyway, he now faces multiple felony charges, and he is in Purgatory Correctional Facility. But neighbors there say they kept calling police on this guy. And again, the police were like, look, you know, unless you see him doing something illegal, we can't come. We can't serve a warrant. We can't. If you walk by the house and smell marijuana, yeah, okay, we could probably find a warrant for that. But he says, we can't legally just bust people's doors down. That's
true, right? You don't want them having that happen to you either.
Right.
So it's hard. Another like caveat on that is next door to my house is a really big, nice home. And they bought it. And I know because I know the agent that sold it and I got the mm-hmm. backstory on it. They bought it to have a nightly rental.
I live
in Santa Clara. It's not allowed.
Yeah.
So I reported and my neighbor reported. And for a while we had the city of Santa Clara helping us. Like they were like, give us pictures when there's different license plates, like just trying to like build a case.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went ahead and they took them to court and they said, you can't do this anymore. So they pulled it off the Airbnb, but now they're still leasing it to other people. But they've mm-hmm. just kind of gone the other way. And now they tell their renters when they come in just to say that they're friends and family. And then there's nothing we can do. And the cops said, sorry, there's nothing we can do.
Mm. Do you know, I'm curious about this, speaking of the short-term rentals, what the cutoff is? Does it have to be like is a week a short still? I'm sure a week is still considered a short-term rental. What about two weeks or a month?
It's
30 days?
30 days, okay. Yep. 30 days.
I figured you would know that. You're pretty sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It calls into, we've been pretty lucky, my wife and I, in that we've never had really terrible neighbors. We've had mm-hmm. a few where we've had some issues, but nothing major. I have a relative who, when the builder built their home, they actually left, they built it so their property was, they actually left 8 feet out. And then when they built the next home, they assumed that 8 feet was theirs, only it actually wasn't. The property line was 8 feet away. Anyway, the neighbors that built a pool too close, would it be too close to the property line, mm-hmm. but if they'd have known that it was the property line was where it really was, they built a gazebo. And anyway, it's a situation there where you've got another little kind of neighbor thing. And mm-hmm. I don't know, have you ever had really bad neighbors where you've had to do something? I mean, you mentioned the one.
Yeah, I had a neighbor in Colorado, and my ex-husband brought home two dogs at one time, two puppies. He's like, well, you can take one back. And so we ended up having two dogs in our backyard. And she was not a nice lady. She would tell us that we couldn't park in front of her house. We were next door. like she owned the street parking in front of her house. And
that's,
she would like,
that's not true.
I know. She would put notes on our car and please do not park here. This is in front of my house.
Right.
And then she called on our dogs because we didn't clean up the poop fast enough, apparently.
In your own yard.
In my own yard, yep. Mm. And that it was affecting her. So we had the people come over and talk to us. So I walked over to her house and I knocked on her door.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yes, I did. And I said, you know what? We are neighbors. And if you have an issue, I would appreciate it if you would just come and talk to me and I will handle whatever you need. You do not need to call other people. I am willing and able to help accommodate whatever is your issue.
Okay.
And so she...
Did you smack her?
No, I
no, I'm
not.
Kidding. Don't
no,
smack.
No smackdown.
No smacking.
But we were not sad. I was not sad to leave. But it was a beautiful house. I loved that neighborhood and that area. But she was just not, like, just made it not fun. And her daughter was a mean girl, too, to, like, one of my daughters. So that wasn't fun either.
I would say maybe it's kind of a golden rule thing. Be the kind of neighbor that you want would mm-hmm. be, I think, the best thing to do. Now, if you're an outgoing, friendly person and you're that kind of neighbor, then your neighbor probably will be that kind of person to you too. We are very quiet, keep to ourselves. We park in the garage. We are out in our backyard, which is fenced, and you know where you can't really. And we had neighbor. Our the next to our house is a rental. They moved in and they are quiet and they're never outside and they just, you know, it's a couple that's empty nesters and they, you know, I mean, we fed their cats a couple of times when they're on vacation and mm-hmm. like their house is very much like ours as far as the inside and, mm-hmm. and, so, but I feel like, I mean, that's exactly the kind of neighbor that we wanted.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, you know, the neighbor thing is kind of a golden rule thing. But unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way when you have 27 illegal immigrants, living next door or a meth, a stolen identity meth guy living next door. And
mm-hmm.
is there, Mello, do you know as a realtor, is there any process a homeowner can, I mean, first of all, I guess you don't buy that house if you're near them, but what if you buy that house and find out your next door neighbor is a meth head? Is there anything
Gosh,
you can do?
I really don't know. I don't know what you would do. I think the neighbors did what they should have done. And like, I think multiple complaints and just make it so they don't want to live there. Yeah. I probably would have, as a realtor, I probably would have done a search and found out who owned the property. And I probably would have gone to the property owner and gone that way.
Mm.
Tried to talk to him and see what I could yeah. work out with him.
Tough deal with this guy out in Central, though. He inherited the house. It was his house. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, with those kind of situations, that's even worse. Because you could maybe call the cops and say you're noticing people coming by and dropping off stuff.
Yeah.
And then that will alert them. And then they could maybe do something with that.
Tough deal, and I apologize to any of you out there that have neighbors who are very difficult neighbors, but the least the best we can do is try to be a good neighbor, mm-hmm. and if we're a good neighbor, maybe it'll rub off a little, hopefully.
Yeah. Or put a sign in your yard saying, here's a Karen, and like put an arrow next to your house. I don't know, maybe that would work. Calm things down a little bit.
I have a sticker on my back window that says, in this house, we believe in Jesus and in firearms. And if you do any harm or break into this home, you might get to meet both of them tonight.
Oh, so, there you go.
Time to check weather.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, welcome back. 9:36 on KDXU. I'm Andy. Melody Finlinson is here
yes.
as well.
Good morning.
She is so mellow.
So mellow today. I am. I'm very...
She is mellow. She stayed up too late last night. Kind of cracks me up. She's like in here. She's like, ugh. I'm like, what? She's like, I stayed up past midnight. I'm like...
I know.
When you were 18 or 27, that's almost a badge of courage. I did it. Yeah. Woo. Look at me. Now you're like,
Dragon, I know. I need to wake up.
For me, because I get up so early for this job, if I stay up past 11, I'm toast.
Really? The whole day?
Oh, yeah. But I got to bed by 11 last night, so mm-hmm. we're hanging in there.
Mm-hmm.
Got a question from a guy, a text said, hey, good AM Andy, know you're a BYU fan. What do you see as the outcome for QB Retzlaff? My thinking is he has certainly done it at BYU and perhaps in college football. Let me read you the news story. Wait, no, I'm going to do some happy stuff first, and then we'll talk about it. UHP trooper delivered a baby on the freeway yesterday.
Aww.
This was in northern Utah, but he's driving along. He was about to pull someone else over, and he sees behind him this guy in a red pickup waving his arms and honking his horn and flipping his lights on and off, and he's like, this dude's crazy. What's he doing? And then he said he looked in his mirror. He could see the guy's face, and the guy looked pretty... distraught, upset, excited, all those things. And so he pulled over, the guy in the pickup truck pulled over, and before he could even, as he's getting out, the guy's going, my wife's having a baby right now. And so the trooper grabs his little med kit, runs back there, and delivers a baby right there on I-15.
Wow, cool. I just got the chills. That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Thanks for the story.
By the way, mother and baby are doing well right now. So another, this is maybe, I don't know, happy or sad. It's an interesting story. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will soon be able to carry their temple recommend digitally.
Nice.
The church announced Thursday that mobile recommends will be available through the Member Tools app on phones and tablets, allowing members to scan their recommend at temples worldwide. Church officials say the change is meant to simplify and improve the temple experience, and it begins, get this, May 29th. That is next week.
Nice.
In the U.S. and Europe, and then the rest of the world will follow behind. But the church is going all digital on us.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right, now to the Retzlaff thing. Okay, so BYU is a strange animal when it comes to college sports because they have something called the Honor Code. And those who have been to BYU or maybe even have heard about it know what I'm talking about. The Honor Code states specifically a couple of things. Number one, that you will go to church on a regular basis. It doesn't say every week, but it says on a regular basis.
Once a year is regular.
And it has to be signed by the bishop, your thing.
Okay.
It also states you will not disobey the word of wisdom. That means no alcohol, no coffee, no tea, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It also states you will be morally clean. And there is a clause in there that says something like you will do nothing to bring shame or embarrassment upon the university or something like that. I don't know the exact wording because it's been years since I read it. But so the whole Jake Retzlaff thing, this is interesting. So this lady claims that in December of 2023, so about a year and a half ago, that she was over at Jake's house watching a movie and they started, you know, getting friendly. And then she decided she didn't want to get friendly anymore and told him to stop, only he wouldn't stop.
Oh, no.
And he, I don't think that they, well, I don't know how far they went, but but when she started resisting, he, according to her, he strangled her and then went ahead and committed some kind of sexual violation on her.
Okay.
I don't know what. I'm not privy to the details, but this is the weird thing about it, okay? Supposedly, she went to the Provo police, and the Provo police told her, you don't want to report a BYU football player.
What?
The Provo police said that never happened, that she's making that up.
Okay.
And they said not only is she making that up, but when she did come, she never reported who attacked her, so they didn't even know it was a BYU player.
Right.
And they tried to call her back to follow up, and they were going to do the rape kit and do the whole study on it, and she never answered her phone.
Oh, no.
It's not like we have a home phone, and they called, and we weren't home at the time.
Right.
We all have cell phones. And it's not like this was 1997.
Right.
This was 2023, and she never answered any of their calls.
And didn't return any of their calls. They leave messages.
So... so just last week, 3 days ago, I guess, she files a civil lawsuit suing Jake Retzlaff.
Oh, my gosh.
Claiming all this stuff in a civil suit. There is no criminal suit. She never filed criminal charges anywhere. And so she has filed the civil suit. Now, I'm kind of coming at it in the angle of, now, why should I believe you at this point, except for that you know in this modern era of college sports that a quarterback for a D1 school is probably making $2 million a year.
Right.
She wants some of that money. Now, whether he sexually assaulted her or not, I do not know. But the whole thing seems a little fishy that she never filed an actual report against him. There is no criminal case, and now she's claiming she wants to sue him civilly. The whole thing seems a little screwy to me.
Like, I don't know. I think that if she went to the police and she was maybe afraid to say who it was, I don't know. I wouldn't discount all of it. No, I think there's something happened.
Yeah.
I think something happened. But to wait until he's making money makes her more suspicious, but doesn't make her a fraud.
So at the time, December 2023, he was not even a starting quarterback for BYU. He was a backup. He hadn't played at all. One down for the team. He had a great year that next year. So December, this incident is reported to have happened in December of 23. The next fall, August through November, he had a great year. And now he's back for his senior year and is poised to have a monster year. And again, like now he's making the big name, image, likeness money. And that's when she files the lawsuit. And again, like you said, you can't discount the whole thing, but you start wondering about the timing of it all. Like,
Right.
Why if she was going to sue him, why didn't she sue him back then?
He didn't have money, but
Well, I know, but I mean, so you wait till he has money to sue him? Is that what you do?
If you have cause, I'm not saying I would do that, but I'm saying if she has cause, so something happened, she kind of brushed it away because there was really nothing you could do. He was on the team. She didn't really want to file criminal charges, but now she's like, well, now he's making money. Now he can pay for that. I don't know. I can see her point of view.
Here's the other weird thing. Okay, so he signed the honor code. BYU's gotten getting a lot of big names now signing in basketball and football. And clearly not all of them are of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints faith. But they all have to sign the honor code. Jake is Jewish. He is not a member of the church. But by every account that I've heard, his personal life aligns with the morals of a member of the church. I mean, and he has said out loud many times, I love it here because everybody here is kind of like me.
Nice.
You know? And so this one is kind of out of left field in that nobody saw this coming. I mean, Jake had what most people said was an unassailable character. He was an upstanding guy, and I don't know. I don't want us to convict Jake of this crime unless it actually happened. Now, you go back to I don't know if you remember this. A few years ago, and I don't know how long it's been, but the Duke lacrosse team was accused of gang raping the lady.
Yes.
Turns out it never happened. She made the whole story up.
That's true.
And so I feel like our society is so, we're so quick to jump on these, on these criminals. Yeah. And I'm like, look, I don't know what really happened. And that's for the courts to decide. But in the meantime, BYU now faces a decision. Cause as you know, the stuff in court moves slowly, right? I don't know that there will be any kind of resolution by the time football season starts in August. And probably not. I would say very likely not. So what does BYU do with Jake Ratzlaff?
I'd still play him.
Do you play him knowing that if he is convicted of this, that, maybe he gets convicted in November after the season's over.
Yeah.
They go 12-1, they get in the college playoff, they have a fantastic year, and it was all driven by a guy who was convicted of rape in court. And then, I mean, how bad does that make your university look?
That's true. And the church and the university do want to protect their image because they've worked really hard to build it. So I can see that. But then is that really fair to crucify him over an allegation?
It's not fair at all, no. But, you can't afford that gamble, can you?
I would, but I don't do sports and I don't do political stuff like that. So I don't know. But I would do it.
It's a tough choice, is what I'm saying. It's going to be a very difficult situation for the leaders of the BYU school, the honor code people. They have, generally speaking, in the past, kind of taken a hands-off on civil cases until there's a resolution.
That's good. That's good.
But this is as unique a case as there has ever been at BYU. Right. The quarterback of the team.
And it's civil, though.
And it's civil. It's not criminal.
Yeah, so at least it's not criminal.
Yeah.
So he won't be convicted. He would be
liable. If it was a criminal case, they would right now suspend him.
Mm-hmm.
They would not expel him, but they would suspend him pending the resolution of the case. Because it's a civil case, it gets a little murky and complicated. Mm-hmm. It's like we were just talking about. Do you let him quarterback? He has a great year, and then he gets... you know, found guilty or whatever, or do, and then you look bad, or do you suspend him? And then as if it turns out to be false, then you just cost a kid a year of his life and maybe millions of dollars. And that's a tough deal.
If he's a really good quarterback, then they're probably going to let him play.
He's a really good quarterback. He is, like I said, he was what BYU needed. Even though he's not a member of the church that owns BYU, he is a good-looking, like I said,
clean cut,
unassailable character, been a good guy. He actually is an active Jewish guy. He even though he's not Mormon, he is a churchy guy. Who yeah, this is going to be one of those deals. That, like, what do you do
That'll
here?
Be interesting to see how it unfolds. We'll have to watch that.
Yeah. All right. I got to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
I am not, Mello, a sadistic person, but this one struck me as funny. My niece posted it up. She said, avoid being bothered by wasps at barbecues this summer by putting a blob of jam on a small child.
Oh.
This struck me as funny.
I actually got stung by a wasp for the first time in my whole life last year. And it really hurt. Days it hurt.
So I have a tremendous amount of respect for bees. Because, I mean, obviously all the great things they do for the environment and everything, but bees also, if they decide to sting you, they give their lives. Bees, the stinger is part of their body. When a bee stings you, it gives its life. Now, hornets and wasps, those guys, they just sting you because they don't like you. There's no commitment there. They're stinging because they're just mean sons of guns, right?
Right, right.
So,
but do the bees know they're going to die if they sting?
Well, I mean, come on, they're insect brains. Do they know? I mean, probably, I would think. I mean, their whole existence is sworn in protection of the hive and the queen, right?
Sure, okay.
So, and of course, speaking of bees, we're going to talk about Washington City and the Heritage Hall. And I don't know if you heard this whole story.
No.
Mello, but I'm at a doctor's appointment with my wife, and you know, she's the executive assistant at Washington City. So when problems come up, they ring Shelley, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sitting at the doctor's office, and her work phone is routed through her cell phone, which is a good idea, you know, if you have that kind of position. And so we're sitting there. I think I was getting an ultrasound on the veins on my leg, or something. I don't know, it was something silly, but. Her phone rings, and we're in this room together, me and the ultrasound tech and my wife, and there's nowhere to go. Like, normally you answer the phone, you go in the other room. There's really nowhere to go. We're kind of trapped in there. And so I get the whole story right there, live in person. It is the construction foreman for the project that they're working on at Heritage Hall in Washington City.
Okay.
And he said, is that you walking over there? And my wife's like, no, I'm at a doctor's appointment. He goes, well, you better run. And she goes, no, I'm in an appointment. He's like, oh, okay, if that's not you. He says, but there are bees everywhere. And she was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, you know how we're doing a reconstruction work on the eaves here of the building. And, well, we opened up one eave to kind of take it apart and redo it. And there's a gigantic beehive in the eaves. And he said, me and my crew were working, pulling this thing apart, and all of a sudden there were bees everywhere. I mean, just everywhere. He said, I was running around, I don't have the quote right in front of me. He says, I was running around the parking lot like a madman. People probably thought I was crazy, but, and then my wife said, ooh, did you get pictures? And he goes, it's kind of hard to take pictures when you're running for your life. So, anyway, not an estimate on how many bees there were, but it was in the thousands. The bee hive and the honeycomb and all that were,
oh my gosh,
you know, like 10 feet long or so. It was just a humongous thing. And
been living there for years.
Yeah, yeah. And somebody decided to remodel that building, and now the bees got to go find a new home. I'm happy to report, and Washington City is happy to report, they got the honeycomb and everything. They got the queen, and they're relocating them.
Good.
They're not just killing them or spraying them or whatever. They're relocating them. And they're going to find a new home. I don't know where, But they're finding a new home for them, hopefully somewhere out where it won't be bothering people. Although it seems like any more, Mela, we've encroached upon a lot of wildlife land, haven't we? Anyway, his name was Devin. Devin Hawes was the name of the foreman. And he was, I think he was kind of excited that we quoted him in the story that I wrote on 890kdxu.com. But if you want to read more details, again, 890kdxu.com. But they did find a lot of bees.
That's cool. I've seen that in remodels when people pull off, like, parts of their walls and stuff. Yeah. And there's, like, there's a noise coming in from the wall. Yeah. You're like, what is that? That's like, is it electricity? What is it? Nope, it's a beehive.
I got a quick, I got a text from Rob about the whole Jake Retzlaff thing. Jake is innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. That is important. And not only that, but it's not a criminal case.
Yeah,
right?
Agreed.
Even if he's found guilty in a civil court, there's no criminal case. He's not, I don't know, it's going to be a really weird area.
Yeah.
Did O.J. Simpson kill Nicole and Ron Goldman? Yeah, probably, but he was found not guilty in criminal court.
Yeah.
You know, and then later on, civil court, they sued him, and, you know.
They
but,
won, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they did win. Let's see. I can't remember his name now, but the other quarterback went on. I think he went on to play for the Chicago Bears. Turned out to be an outrageous party animal. Jim McMahon was his name, by the way. And I don't know the details about that, but I think probably there are, I hate to say this, I don't want to be careful, but there are some slightly different rules for athletes versus regular student body.
Mm-hmm.
I know there were a couple times when, you know, where, when, I mean, stupid little things like I had one class on Fridays when I was at BYU. It was a, intermediate basketball class.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only class I had all day long. So, of course, BYU has a beard law. You're not allowed to have a beard or even scruff on your face. You can have a mustache, but you can't have a beard at BYU. So, on Fridays, I don't want to shave for a basketball class that, you know, is at 9:30 in the morning or something.
Yeah.
So, on Fridays, I would get up and go to class without shaving. And at least twice, that I can remember, at least twice, I got sent home to shave so that I could come back and play basketball.
No way.
Not even kidding. And, you know, they had, it, when you have a PE class, they don't grade you on your athleticism. They grade you on your attendance, on whether you're there or not. So I couldn't even just go home and go back to bed. I had to literally go home, shave, and go back to class and play basketball for another 20 minutes or
my
whatever.
Goodness.
Yeah. So the honor code is there, but they do, I've noticed they've allowed some athletes to have a little bit longer hair than they used to be, you know, off your collar. That's it. You couldn't have hair longer than that. And
how long was Jesus's hair? I'm just asking.
Well,
for a friend.
That's a little bit different cultural times.
I'm just kidding.
Wasn't a barber on every corner.
That's
but,
true.
And shaving was a little bit harder back then. But yeah, I just, this whole Jake Retzlaff thing really bothers me in that. There is no criminal case. And and so to me, it's like, how do you handle this? Like,
right. Because anybody can witch hunt after you.
Yeah. And many an athlete, but there's one athlete, I forget his name now, but he's a famous athlete, and he will not get in an elevator if there's one female in the elevator.
And that's wise. You need to protect yourself, and you shouldn't give females a ride home if you're not with them or with another person, because you open yourself up to liability.
That's exactly, you know, and the interviewer that was interviewing this guy said, well, what, that's nuts. What are you, crazy? What if she's ugly? What if she's old? What if she's fat? He's like, I don't care. I'm not getting on an elevator if there's one woman in there and nobody else.
Right.
And the guy's like, that's just crazy. Come on. And he goes, look, you don't understand the world I live in.
Mm-hmm.
If I do anything, not even if I don't do anything, if I'm in an elevator alone with that woman for 4 minutes, guess what kind of story is going to come out in the news the next day or 2 days later if that woman is of a mind, she finds out I'm a famous athlete.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's just a money grab sometimes.
So
I'm not saying it's in this case, but it could be.
We don't know. Yeah.
We
really don't know.
I think Rob's right. And you need to just let him live his life, go through the process that he's gotten tangled up in. And, you know, that's also something for kids to think about. Like, if you're alone with somebody, they can say anything they want to say. So it's better to be, like, in a group setting until you, like, find the one you want to date and stuff like that, I think, just to keep yourself safe.
Yeah, we've come to this world. I had a relative of mine get accused of some doing some things improper. Now, they had video to prove he did not do those things.
Mm-hmm.
But for a little while before the video, before they were able to secure the video because it was in a public place and he could prove that it was not true, they suspended him.
Yeah.
And he couldn't go to his job. It was like a month while they investigated this thing. And, man, talk about disrupting your life.
I know. It's not fair.
We've run out of time, Mello.
Dang.
Thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you.
Catch you again. See you later.
Catch you again.
We got to go.